1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Thursday edition of the program, the Bears are inquiring. They're pushing for Carson Wentz. We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Tom Waddle, the host of Waddle and Silby on ESPN 1000 and a former Bears wide receiver. We talk with him extensively about Carson Wentz, what the Bears need to do for next year, Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, Mitch Trubisky, and a whole lot more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Ryan McDevitt. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you save an average of $889. State Farm agent Ryan McDevitt is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. Call Ryan today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or visit his website, RyanIsMyAgent.com. That's RyanIsMyAgent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. Don't ever be desperate. I know it's easy to say in practice, but if you show desperation to anybody, you're going to be screwed. You will be cheated. People will take advantage of you. You will be lied to. And in the end, you yourself will be hurt. Take the Bears, for instance. Everyone knows they're desperate. It's not a secret. The Bears need a quarterback. Technically. I still believe Mitch would suffice, but I digress. The Bears need somebody under center for 2021. Reportedly, Pace and Nagy's jobs are on the line. If they don't win. So they need a quarterback. They need somebody to come in and resurrect, rectify the franchise. That's a tall task. You would think, in that situation, they'd be targeting the best option possible. They'd be inquiring day in and day out about Deshaun Watson. Maybe Derek Carr. They could draft somebody. A couple of good free agents out there. Re-sign Mitch. Nope. They want to bring in a broken quarterback. They want to bring in a project because they believe, get this, they could fix him. The Bears believe they can fix Carson Wentz. Sure. This came out yesterday from Albert Breer of the Monday Morning Quarterback. Quote, I think Chicago is the front runner this morning, and I do know that there's a feeling inside the building from Ryan Pace, from the coaching staff, and Matt Nagy that they believe they can mechanically fix him. Right, the same people who let Mitch Trubisky's mechanics get out of control. Go fix Carson Wentz. Don't worry. How are we supposed to believe that? We're not that stupid. Come on. We may not be smart. We may not be smart enough to make the decisions they make, but we're not that stupid either. You believe, honestly, that you could fix Carson Wentz. No chance. I've seen what you've done to quarterbacks. I've seen the guys you've signed and brought in. I know you can't do it. Mike Glennon, Nick Foles, Mitch Trubisky, Chase Daniel, are you kidding me? You believe you could fix Wentz? Get out of here. Somebody help me understand, okay? Wentz, statistically, was the worst quarterback in the NFL last year. Him and Foles. Worst in the NFL. And the Bears are actively considering bringing him in. Giving up draft capital. Paying his contract. Leaving money on the books in the future for the worst quarterback in football. Have they lost their minds? Now the Bears are pushing harder for Wentz. Pushing harder than the Colts. Why? For what reason? Oh, that's right. Desperation. The Bears are desperate. Everybody knows it. The Eagles are desperate to get rid of Wentz. Wow. Sounds like a match made in heaven, doesn't it? Talk about bad news. Talk about bad news for a number of reasons. The Bears' future is going to be mortgaged completely for a horrible quarterback. They're going to give up draft picks. They're going to have to pay his salary. If they don't win this year, goodbye Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. And guess what? Wentz's contract and Wentz himself will still be on the books. And those draft picks, long gone. They're gone forever. The ramifications here are off the charts. And for some reason, I haven't seen much talk or much of anything related to those. All I've seen is we need a quarterback. You need to think about what happens after that. What happens after we acquire a quarterback? That should be on your mind. No one's talking about it, and it needs to be said. What's really sad about all this is that apparently this is the best the Bears could do. Really? This is the best? The best you could do is offer up so much for Carson Wentz? I thought about this today as I prep for the show. I mean this too. The Bears have become the Browns. Tell me I'm wrong. No one wants to come to Chicago. They used to say, when your career died, you'd go to Cleveland. What about now? What primo players actually want to come here? Carson Wentz doesn't. He even said it. Carson Wentz doesn't even want to come here. Think about that. The league's worst quarterback wants nothing to do with the Bears. That's profound. That's pretty significant. The worst quarterback in football does not want to be here. And the Bears are desperate to get him. And they're desperate at that position. And they're willing to mortgage the future significantly for him or for anybody. Tell me I'm wrong. The Bears are the Browns. It's official. We've seen it happen. The quarterback carousel for the Bears since 2000 has been off the charts. Same for the Browns. The Bears barely make the playoffs. Same as the Browns. Now, even the league's worst players don't want to come here. Same as the Browns. couple of years ago on this program, I had DeMario Davis on. DeMario Davis is a starting linebacker for the New Orleans Saints, but he played 1 year in Cleveland back when they were horrible. I remember to this day what he said. I thought my career was over when I played in Cleveland. It was a horrible environment. Is that the Bears now? I know they have talent. Everybody has talent. But look at their organization. You essentially have a lame duck coach, a lame duck GM. They have support from ownership. No quarterback, no wide receivers. Regressing defense, no O-line. Which team does that sound like to you? Tell you one thing, doesn't sound like the Patriots. Doesn't sound like the Packers, the Steelers, Baltimore. No. Sounds like Cleveland before this season. The Bears are in a horrible position. I get it. I know the market itself is scarce. I mean, is it Wentz? Carr, maybe Watson. That's it for trades. And you gotta either sign a free agent or draft. I know it's tough. But that's pretty significant to me. The Bears are making a stronger push than Indianapolis, horrible as it is. We all know Wentz would do better in Indianapolis. Good O-line, more weapons, great coach. And Wentz has said he doesn't want to be here. That the Bears are still going after him. Count me in as confused. If you've got all that going against you, you should know by that point it's time to give up. Go after someone else. It's pretty apparent. Obviously, the Bears don't see signs. It's written on the wall. Don't do this. Think about it this way, at least. Why acquire a guy who doesn't want to be here? Seriously. You're going to give up draft capital. You're going to pay his contract. He's a horrible quarterback as it is. I think he's unfixable, or at least he's not fixable with the Bears. And on top of it, he doesn't prefer to be here. Why would you trade for him? For what reason? For what purpose? Would that make you a better team? No. You'd be about the same, if not worse. I don't understand it. Desperation makes you do things you really don't want to do. This is proof. I don't think the Bears really want Carson Wentz. I think what they want is a quarterback. And they know Wentz is not the best option. No question. But they need to make a splash. Jobs are on the line. The team's season is on the line. Something needs to happen for them to win. So apparently, that means bring in Wentz. That's the problem. I almost feel bad, in a sense, for Nagy and Pace. They have to make something happen. They have to do something to keep their jobs. My concern with this, though, is that you'd be giving up everything for a one-year fix with Wentz, and if it doesn't go well, you're fired. And the next guy who comes in is stuck with this burden. Stuck with the burden of no draft picks, Carson Wentz. And if you thought Mitch Trubisky couldn't play in this offense, wait till you see Wentz. Oh, Mitch needs so much help, it's way different, yeah? Carson Wentz does too. And if you don't have Allen Robinson and your number one receiver is Darnell Mooney, good luck to any quarterback, not just Wentz, anybody. So I get it. I know the Bears are in a tough position. But think long and hard before you make this decision, before you pull the trigger. Think about what could happen in the future. Think about what Wentz has already said. I don't get it. Why acquire a quarterback who doesn't want to be here? And why do the Bears believe they can fix him? That's a joke, right? They're quarterback breakers, not fixers. And that's not just Nagy and Pace. That's throughout history. They've never had a good quarterback. What makes you think Wentz will come in and be fine in this system with his personnel and with that coach? They become the Browns, I'm telling you. It's a fact. They've become the NFL's most undesirable location. If the NFL's worst quarterback doesn't want to come here, if he says, I prefer Indianapolis to Chicago, what does that say about the organization? What does that say about the team, those who run it, and the round-the-field product? No one's really said this yet. Everyone's chalking up Wentz's preference to his relationship with Frank Reich, and that's fine. But philosophically, think about that. The league's worst quarterback wants nothing to do with the Bears. That's a pretty damning statement. That, to me, equates the Bears to the Browns, where careers go to die. Where they trusted Brock Osweiler, RG3, Derek Anderson, Colt McCoy, so many others to be the guy. All of those guys went there or were there when they were on their last legs. You could argue today Carson Wentz is in that same boat, and guess what? He doesn't even want to come to the Bears. That, to me, makes them comparable, if not worse, than the Browns. That's pretty significant. That should tell you a lot about where they are right now and their situation. I mean, they're pushing. They're pushing for Wentz. And he said, nope, don't want to go there. Who knows what the offer is? Draft capital, I'm sure. Maybe an NFL player. Paying his contract, all of that, and he still doesn't want to come here. This is a worst-case scenario. Wentz doesn't want to be here. The Bears are pushing as hard as they can. They may give up too much. They may overpay. Why do it? You can't fix him. You might think you can. You can't. Mitch Trubisky is my witness. We all know the story there. Matt Nagy went out of his way to make sure that Mitch conformed to him. And at the end of the day, Mitch is gone, Nagy stays, and Mitch, like Wentz, is broken. So how is Wentz going to be in a different situation? What, Nagy's going to change? For Wentz? I don't think so. I just ask everybody to think about this long and hard. To fans, to Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, all of them. Think about this. Think about what this means if it happens. Think about what happens to the Bears' future. Think about the fact that Wentz doesn't prefer Chicago. Wouldn't be a good fit. It'd be rocky from the beginning, and I wouldn't want any part of it. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Tom Waddle comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $253 to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You must be 21 plus. You must be an Illinois resident. You could bet $253 on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. NBA, college basketball. The NHL's back, too. This is, without question, the best time to put down some money and make a whole lot more back. That's sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Talk Chicago. Here with John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the host of Waddle and Silby on ESPN 1000 and a former Bears wide receiver. Please welcome Tom Waddle to the program. Tom, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me.
Tom, should the Bears acquire Carson Wentz?
No.
Why not?
Short and succinct, right? I mean, that's... You think I would have learned after 25 years doing 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, that, you know, short answers don't work. But look, I think there are a number of reasons from my perspective. The first is I think he's broken at the moment. I think Carson, I think he can be fixed. I think there's still talent in there. But I think in the moment, I think he's broken, and I don't have any real faith that the brain trust and the powers that be up at Hallis Hall at this time have the capacity to fix him. And, you know, I think it's been on display. I think whether it's Ryan swinging and missing with Mike Glennon, and then the trade up for Mitch that didn't work out, and then the trade for Nick Foles, which obviously Matt had a lot of influence on. I think that from a personnel decision perspective, it hasn't worked. And then, like, look, Matt deserves a lot of the blame for not getting more out of Mitch. So I don't think that they've done a great job identifying talent. I don't think they've done a great job of developing talent. And for those reasons, I'm not confident that they have the ability, based on their track record here in Chicago, I'm not comfortable and confident that they have the ability to fix Carson Wentz. And when you trade for Carson, John, you're going to have to give up some draft currency. I mean, it's not going to be a lot. But then, as far as I understand, you're going to have to assume 2 years and $47 million worth of contract space. Carson Wentz is not a savior. Carson Wentz, as I said, needs to be fixed, which means you need to surround him with talented players. You need to help him out. I have questions about their offensive line. I have questions about their passing game. I have questions about a lot of things that they're going to do offensively at this time. So I'm not interested in giving up the draft currency, albeit it won't be a first round pick. I'm not interested in tying myself into a guy that needs to be fixed for 2 years and $47 million. And I'm not convinced that the group up at Hallis Hall has the capacity at this moment to surround him with enough and to fix some of the issues that ail him right now. So after giving that really curt, short answer of no, I've just gone the complete opposite direction and give you a long-winded answer. But yeah, I'm pretty adamant about this. It's just not, I don't think this is the time and the place to make that move. I think Carson Wentz has a better chance of succeeding in Indianapolis. I think they're more equipped to help him. And I just don't see this as a fit that I would be an advocate of.
Tom Waddle here on Sports Talk Chicago. Tom, who's the better option then for the Bears at quarterback? What should they do for next year?
I would stand pat and do nothing, to be honest with you. I know that's not the popular opinion. Look, there's only one guy out there that I'd be willing to quote unquote mortgage the future for, and that's Deshaun Watson. But I think we all are in agreement that they don't have the currency to make that deal. So look, you could convince me that David Carr at the age of 30 was worth the 20th pick overall, but you're not going to get him for the 20th pick and nothing else. So with all that in mind, look, John, I'm trying to create a situation because I lack faith at this moment. Maybe they'll change my mind in the 2021 season, but right now I don't have a lot of confidence in their ability to get this thing back on track on the offensive side of the ball. So with that as my perspective, what I would like them to do is do whatever the decision would be that would leave you with the least amount of baggage going forward, if that makes any sense. So I don't want to give up a bunch of draft picks that will then hamstring the next staff. And I don't want to be tied into somebody like Carson Wentz, who, if you do make the deal in 2021, looks like 2020. and he's still on your books for another $20+ million in 2022, and you have no interest in playing him, then you remain on this treadmill that has taken them nowhere.
How concerning is that to you? The fact that Pace and Nagy are expected to win next year, and because of that declaration being made, they may have to give up and mortgage the future, give up money, pay a contract that they don't want, and then have that probably stay for the next person who comes in. How concerning is that?
Very concerning for me is that you are letting guys who, quote unquote, are on the hot seat make decisions that will help preserve their jobs, but may hinder the organization going forward if they don't work. It's really, I think it's a dangerous approach. And it's one that does leave me more than a little bit concerned. Look, if they decide to package some things and move up in the draft and try to draft another young quarterback, this organization's tied to these guys for more than the 2021 season. I actually am one that believes, too, that there's more job security there than many believe. I don't believe this is, hey, you got to win 10, 11 games and get to the second round of the postseason or else everybody's fired. I don't buy that. I just think that my conclusion comes based on the evidence of what we saw in the postseason press conference, where they went out of their way to tell you how much they like these guys. And look, I like them too. Like I've had more access to Matt Nagy than I've had to Ryan Pace. Both are really good guys. But like, I want somebody that has shown a consistency in terms of their competence. And right now, being good guys isn't enough. You've got to change the arc of the franchise. And I don't think that the ownership's appreciation for them being good men has equated to any type of success. So it does leave me, you know, look, I'm a fan first before I'm an analyst here. This team runs in my blood. And you know, I love a lot of the people up there. But by the same token, I've got to take a step back and look at the situation without bias. And yeah, I'm more than a little concerned, John.
Let me ask you this. After this season, did you want to rebuild or did you expect it?
I didn't expect a rebuild because, again, I had kind of a feeling that there was an appreciation for how much George and Ted liked Ryan and how much they like Matt. I get that. But, you know, again, this is a billion-dollar business. So I wasn't expecting change. I was hoping for it. I'm not going to lie. And again, I'm not a guy. I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm not a guy that is ever looking for a pound of flesh. I know how difficult it is to win consistently. The spotlight is on you. Yes, guys are handsomely compensated. There's a lot of perks that go along with being the head coach and the general manager of an NFL franchise. But with that in mind, I think that there's a shelf life. There's shelf life to ideas. There's shelf life to a plan. And if it was up to me, based on their inability to find their quarterback of the future, I would have pivoted and gone in a different direction. I would have thanked them both for their participation and their diligence and their appreciation and their dedication. But I would have gone in a different direction, John, because of what you mentioned in the previous conversation was, like, these guys are going to be saddled with making decisions that ultimately, if they don't work out, are going to push this franchise back even further. And I just don't know that that's the best path for them.
Who's more to blame for this situation, Nagy or Pace?
Well, I would say Pace. I mean, I think that, you know, Ryan's done a nice job in certain areas, especially defensively. I think he's done a pretty good job more times than not assembling a good defense. Offensively, though, I mean, as I talked, and not to be repetitive, he hasn't been able to solve the quarterback situation. He's totally ignored the offensive tackle position in terms of drafting guys high. You know, the swings and misses, whether it's Kevin White or it's Adam Shaheen, or, I mean, you can go through the list. It's left them having to play catch up. And so, I was more disappointed after the 2019 season in the coach than I was the quarterback, because I never saw the coach do what I thought was right, which was tailor the scheme and the system to the strengths of what Mitch had shown you in previous years. I thought he was stubborn and he wanted Mitch to to appropriately and efficiently run his system, as opposed to tailoring his system to the strengths of his quarterback. So, like, I was more disappointed in Matt than I was in Mitch. So, I've been critical of some of the decisions Matt has made. But I would say, to answer your question again, I would say their biggest issue, especially on the offensive side of the ball, is personnel.
How do you feel about that, by the way, the whole Mitch and Nagy rhetoric? I mean, if you're a quarterback in the NFL today, you should be able to do what you want. You should have the freedom. It's much different than it was 20, 30 years ago. How do you feel about the fact that Nagy essentially put Mitch in a corner and told him, if you don't conform, you're not going to be the guy here?
Well, I think, that's a complex and nuanced answer, because, like, I know I don't want to make any assumptions. I think that you've been a guy that thinks a lot of Mitch. And listen, that doesn't mean you and I are at odds. Everybody's opinion is valid, and everyone sees different things. With that as kind of a backdrop, I would say, I don't think Mitch is the guy that you want to turn everything over to. I think he does need some guidance, and I think he does need some coaching, and I think you need to tailor things to him. And I think they finally did that at the tail end of this past season. So I don't think it was a matter of them not letting Mitch be Mitch. I think it was a matter of them asking Mitch to be somebody he's not. And that's where I was critical of Matt. Like, the first couple games of the 2020 season, I was like, all right, Matt got it. Matt looked at the film. He did some self-scouting, and he decided that the best thing to do is focus on running the football, because most quarterbacks in this league are dependent and need the help of a running game.
Right.
So they're going to commit to running the football. They're going to use Mitch's ability athletically to get outside the pocket. I've always found Mitch to be more accurate outside the pocket than between the tackles, because he never looks comfortable there. And then if he doesn't trust what he's seeing, then his fundamentals and his technique breaks down, and then he finds himself in trouble. So getting him on the edge was always the right thing in my mind to do. So I think we saw some of that against Detroit. We saw some of it against the Giants. And then we saw what Matt's true intentions were, I think, halfway through the Falcons game, where Mitch wasn't playing well. But at that point, Matt kind of gave in to his desire, his lust to run his offense. So, like, I don't think they did him any favors. I think they left him out to, like, look, John, this is one of those situations where there's a lot of blame to go around from my perspective. There are moments when Mitch is fully responsible for his performance. But I thought in 2019, there were a lot of situations where Matt left him hanging out there and hung him out to dry, asking him to do things that A, he wasn't comfortable with, and B, he didn't have the complementary pieces in his offensive huddle to accomplish what Matt was asking him to do. So I saw them make some of those changes in the first couple of games, and I was like, yeah, he finally got it. Then obviously what happened, and then when Mitch came back, they went back to tailoring things to what he did well. They focused more on the running game. Obviously, they found some improvements on their offensive line. They solidified some things, and it worked. It worked better. So, but I don't think there's any doubt. There was never any trust. There wasn't any trust. You look back in time and you watch the game plans and you watch the situation, you watch the body language. This was a marriage made in hell. You know, we talk about marriages made in heaven. This was a marriage made in hell. And I think it played out, you know, and especially at the end of the year, you saw how the offense was limited against the Green Bay Packers, and the game plan was limited against the New Orleans Saints. And I think that told you everything you needed to know about whether or not going forward these two guys could coexist.
Tom Waddle here on Sports Talk Chicago. Tom, besides quarterback, what more do the Bears need to address for next season?
They've got to get better up front. Like, I like Sam Mustipher. I think they've found some things and some different combinations, but like I said, look, there are very few quarterbacks in this league that can transcend what's in that huddle and what's in front of them and be successful without some help. And they've got to focus on running the football. Until you find that quarterback that is able to do it without a whole lot of help running the ball, you got to get better at the line of scrimmage. So they've got to find some answers at tackle, I don't think you'll see them cut both Massey and Leno. I think it's very likely that they'll move on from one of them. They've got to save some money because the salary cap is coming down for 2021. So they got to fix their offensive line. They've got to commit to David Montgomery. Like, look, I'm not here to tell you that David Montgomery is the second coming of a healthy and younger, Ezekiel Elliott. He's not Walter Payton, but I'm impressed with him, and I'm a guy that believes you have to give him 20 touches a game. You've got to make a decision on what you're going to do on the edge with Allen Robinson. I love Allen Robinson. I don't know if you can afford, based on their salary cap situation, to either franchise him or sign him to an extension. They've got some serious questions that need to be answered there. But they've got to take a good, long, hard look at what's going on. We all focus on the quarterback position, and we should, because it's the most important position in all of professional sports. But in most instances, it's the most dependent position in sports as well. And they have not done a good job surrounding whoever's under center with enough talented players.
If Allen Robinson doesn't return, Tom, who's the quarterback going to throw to?
That's a great question. I like Darnell Mooney. I think he is a fantastic young player. I don't know what his ceiling is, but you can convince me he could be a solid two down the line. Anthony Miller was a guy that flashed. Everyone loved him in his rookie year in training camp, and I think you saw some very nice highlights from him. He was efficient. I think he had 7 touchdowns as a rookie, and the progress just hasn't been there. Like Cole Kmet has shown you that there's some talent there, but we don't know where his ceiling is either. If you move on from – look, you look at what the Vikings did, and I know it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but the Vikings decided they were going to move on from Stephon Diggs. Right. But what did they do? They used a first-round draft pick on Justin Jefferson, and in a lot of ways, they got comparable production for an eighth of the price. So if they decide to move on from Allen, they're going to have to spend a pretty high draft pick on a wide receiver that can pick up some of that slack. Does it have to be the 20th pick? Maybe not. But you better be able to find somebody at least in the second or third round that you can count on. Look, I'd love to bring Allen back. I think Allen's an underrated player. Is he a guy that can consistently take the top off of defense? No, but he's got as good a hands as there are in the league. He's a great route runner. He's a winner. He's a quality player. I would love to see them bring him back. I just don't know with their cap situation what the capacity is for them to be able to squeeze him in.
What's the more important need, would you say, offensive line help or wide receiving help?
I'd go with the offensive line. Look, my preference, as we talked a moment ago, would have been to kind of rebuild and change.
Right.
I don't think this team is on the cusp, and I may be in the minority there. I don't believe, like, if you go back and look at the 2019 season, they were an 8-18. They beat some crappy teams that that were playing some quarterbacks that really – they played David Blau, they played Jeff Driscoll, they played Sean Mannion. And this is, I'm not trying to drill those guys, but, their 8-8 season in 2019 felt more like a 6-10 year. This past year, they did the same thing. They beat up on some of the weaker teams, especially down the stretch, and they struggled against the better teams. So my perspective, I guess, is what I'm saying is I think they're further away than maybe they do. So I would look at more of a rebuilding approach. And for me, look what the Colts did several years ago. They solidified that offensive line, and that's what I would do. I would spend my draft currency on trying to find some core players that make you better down the road. They're probably going to look for more of a quick fix because there's an urgency for them to win and protect their job security. But if it was up to me and nobody's calling me and asking my opinion up at Halasaw, I'd zoom out. I'd take my lumps. I'd never condone losing, but I'd take a longer-term approach. And that's kind of the path I would go. And look, I get it. In this league, you can win quickly, but I just don't think – I think this team is in great need of finding some long-term answers that may push you back a little bit initially.
What about defensively? What do they need there, do you think?
Well, they need their. I think what they need is their marquee players to be more productive. you know, I had somebody that I trust more than anybody in this industry and in the league, you know, who looked objectively at Khalil Mack and said, look, he's a great player. But my guy says that, you know, he's concerned that they use him too much. Like, and I know what some people think, look, he's one of the highest paid defensive players in the league. You can't play him too much. But when there's diminishing return, maybe you do have to watch his snap total. Akeem Hicks has been one of the most underrated, but one of the most accomplished players, I think, on defense in the league in the last couple of years. You got to gauge how much he's got left in the tank. I was, all full disclosure, I was a fan of the Robert Quinn signing. I think his win rate as a pass rusher with the Cowboys was as good or better than anyone in the league. And I've seen him do some good things. I don't know what the situation was with him. Some people thought he came in with an injury. I don't know that to be true, but all I know is you didn't get enough from him. So I, you know, listen, it starts with the guys that you're paying handsomely. They've got to be more productive than they have been in the past. I do believe that they're going to have to possibly move somebody or move on from someone to create some cap space. I think that currently they're up against the cap or they're over the cap. And the only way that you're going to be able to add some guys is if you actually kind of rearrange some of the things. So Eddie Jackson needs to play better. You know, Jalen Johnson needs to continue to develop. I'd like to see them bring Gibson back. I thought he was one of their best, if not their best, most consistent player in the secondary. You know, again, I don't know that there's massive changes needed. You've got to decide who you can afford and who you can't afford. You know, I like Eddie Goldman. His return will help. I like Bilal Nichols. He's a guy that I would want in the mix because he's young and he does some really good things. But you got to get better play out of the guys that are you know, taking home the majority of the salary.
So, Tom, with all of this being said, what's your expectation for the Bears next year? Your way too early expectation.
They're an 8-18, John. They've been an 8-18 for the last several years. They're good enough to beat the bad teams, and they're not good enough to beat the good teams. That's on full display. As I mentioned earlier, in the last two seasons, they've had three wins against teams that ended the season with winning records. They beat the Minnesota Vikings twice in 2019. In the first game, Mitch got hurt early in the first quarter and Chase Daniel came in and the Bears defense destroyed Cousins and the Vikings. I think they held them less than 10 points. The second game against the Vikings was week 17. Vikings had already clinched a spot, had nowhere to move in terms of up in the seedings. They played their backups. In 2020, the only win they had against the team with a winning record was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Tom Brady forgot what down it was at the very end. If he knows that's third down and not fourth down, if you see the back that's creeping out of the backfield in that play, and I know you're a football junkie, you probably know what I'm talking about. If he just hits the check down, it's a first down.
Right.
And they're in field goal range, and they probably lose that game. So, I mean, the moral of my story is that, again, the history of this team over the last 2 years has been that they beat the bad teams, they lose to the good teams, which usually means you're an 8-8 team. And I don't see anything currently that would lead me to believe that they're going to get out of that pattern.
More to come with Tom Waddle in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Tom Waddle here on Sports Talk Chicago. Tom, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, your favorite teammate on the Bears was who?
Wow, it's so many guys I loved. Like, I loved Mark Bortz because of how damn tough he was. I think Mark Bortz, he was one of our guards, actually played a part of a season with his groin torn from his pelvis.
Wow.
Like, you walk into the huddle and you see that guy and you're like, damn, that's a grown ass man right there. I appreciated the toughness and the competitive nature of Jim Harbaugh and his willingness to throw me the ball. I loved Wendell Davis. I've always said that Jim Morrissey was one of my favorite teammates. Ron Rivera was one of my favorite teammates. Dan Hampton was probably the most accomplished teammate. I mean, Richard Dent was awesome. Steve McMichael, gosh. I mean, I was so blessed, John, to play with some of the greats in the modern era. But I always had a tremendous appreciation and respect for Wendell Davis, who I thought was just an elite receiver, could do so many different things. He was such a good guy. I enjoyed my time in the receiver's room with him. I think his career obviously was derailed by the injury he suffered in Philadelphia, where he tore both patella tendons. I loved Wendell. He was such a good, you know, he's a good man. He was a fantastic player. And, you know, I spent a lot of time with him as we were the starting receivers for that team for a couple of years. So, you know, it's a list. The list is long of all the guys I appreciated and loved, but I always had a special feeling for Wendell.
About your best memory in a Bears uniform, what would that be?
That's easy. I had toiled on the practice squad for a couple of years and really had no real, you know, moments in the 89 and 90 season. I think I caught a 4-yard hitch route in 90 against the San Francisco 49ers. I think that was the first catch I ever had in the National Football League. But it was meaningless because as was the you know, how things went against the Niners, I think they were beating us like 90-5 late in the fourth quarter. So I would say there's no doubt. I mean, the opening game of the season in 1991 against the Minnesota Vikings, like, I got cut that Monday before the game. You know, it was the typical, I walked into Ditka's office and he gave me the speech about how much he appreciated how hard I worked and how I didn't miss any practices and how much he appreciated me. And then he would tell me, but I got to let you go. But he cut me and then he brought me back. And he said, look, we've got injuries. I think Anthony Morgan at the time was hurt. You're going to be dressed for Sunday against the Vikings, opening game of the season. And I can remember, I don't remember much, John, but I remember sitting on his couch and being dejected when he cut me because I'd had such a good training camp. And he said, we're going to cut you, but we're going to bring you back because we've got injuries for Sunday. And I looked at him and I go, I'm going to play on Sunday. And he looked at me and he laughed. He goes, no, you're not going to play, but I don't have any other receivers. So you're going to be out there. You're going to be in uniform. So like, listen, there was no real expectation that I was going to get any run, but there was a moment early in the first half on third and something. And just, you know, I didn't have many highlights. So, you know, indulge me here with this long story. But like at third and eight, I come running into the huddle and everyone kind of looked at me and was like, what are you doing here? And I was like, listen, they sent me in here. It's third and eight and Harbaugh kind of like winks at me because Jim always trusted me. But just I don't know if he ever thought I was going to get on the field. And we ran a play, I think, called, 82 as an all hook route. And I remember third and eight and I kind of beat Todd Scott at the line of scrimmage. He was a cornerback for the Vikings and got to about 12 yards, turned around, and Jim hit me between the 8 and 7. It was first down. And I like floating. Like, I was like, this is the greatest moment of my life. And I was like, at that point, I could have just expired and I would have, you know, lived my fantasy. But later in the first half, you know, we got into another third down situation and we came into the huddle and it was like 30 seconds. I think there was like 38 or 37 seconds left in the first half. We were on the 35 or 37 yard line and come into the huddle and we call, I think it was 82 all go. So instead of hooks, we were all running go routes. And, you know, I'm like, well, they're not throwing it to me for obvious reasons. You know, I got Kaz on the outside left. They ain't throwing it to him because he was slower than I was. I think we had Dennis Gentry in one of the slots, and I think Ron Morse was in one of the slots or Wendell was in one of the slots. So I think Wendell was. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to run this route, and it's definitely not coming to me, but let's go. So ball snapped, and the line of scrimmage, I escaped Todd Scott again. And I get like 10 yards down the field, and I feel him on my hip, but I got behind him, which is like, you know, crazy. I've told this story 1,000 times. It's like I get further down the field and I'm like, I'm distancing myself from him. I'm like, it's the greatest moment of my life. I just got deep on a cornerback in the National Football League. I'm just going to keep running. I'm going to run through the end zone and go up the top. Well, you know, understanding that's not great for your job security. You're like, okay, I've got him beat. You know, you might as well look back. Harbaugh's no way going to throw it to me. So I look back and I'm like, to my amazement, here comes this floating orange object. And I'm like, holy, you know what? He threw this to me. And like the first feeling you have is like a feeling of panic. Like this is the moment you've been waiting for. Don't screw it up. But then the second feeling is I've been doing this since I was 8 years old, growing up in Cincinnati, Ohio. I've dove for this pass. I've made this catch a million times. I'm going to make this catch. So I lean out, I dive out, I catch the ball, I bounce into the end zone, touchdown. And here come all my teammates, and like everyone's coming over, and they're like this big celebration, and they're like, well, you know, everyone, and I'm kind of silent, and everyone's like, what's going on? I see Kaz is coming over, and he's like, come on, roll your touchdown, this is awesome. I'd landed on my elbows, so like I caught the ball cleanly, but when I bounced in the end zone, my elbows got caught in my diaphragm, and like I lost all my ability to breathe and to talk, and I actually puked a little bit on my face mask at the same time. So this is the greatest moment in my NFL career. I score a touchdown for the first time, and I actually can't even enjoy it because I've landed on my elbows. I've knocked the wind out of my stomach, and I'm actually got a little bit of puke on my face mask. But long story short, John, that's the it's my favorite and most meaningful moment, and it actually kind of propelled me to have the, you know, the mediocre career that I had. That was the first game of the 91 season. I became a starter soon after that, and kind of launched what was my career.
And Tom, before we finish up today, last question. What's the funniest moment that you've been a part of on Waddle and Sylvie?
God, there have been so many of them. The funniest moment. Wow. That's, you know, as you can tell, like I'm not at a loss for words for pretty much anything. And now I find myself, after 14 years, I find myself trying to figure out what's the funniest thing that's ever happened. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to have to call you back soon, like a few days later, and kind of figure out what it is. Like, we have so much fun on that show, and for the most part, we don't take ourselves serious. So, there was a time where I do believe we weren't on the air, but Sylvie and I were going to do a show at the United Center, and we've been hard on Tom Thibodeau. We love Tom Thibodeau, but we've been hard on him because of how hard he was on his players, and he would grind them, and he would play them all these minutes, and guys were then, they were taxed. And so after kind of weeks and weeks and weeks of banging on Tom for his usage of his players, we were doing a show from the United Center because we were carrying the team at the time. And I swear to God to you, Tibbs comes pulling out as we're come walking in, and he's in this black Range Rover, and he has a very angry look on his face. And I swear to you, he swerved and tried to hit us. He won't admit to that. We've developed a great relationship with Tom over the course of time, but that's probably the one. It's probably the one thing I remember most about our moments together. I mean, we've had some great moments with Cutler. Probably watching Jay give Sylvie hell after Sylvie was as vocally appreciative of what Josh McCown was doing during that year. probably the weekly Jay Cutler show where Sylvie would squirm, and he would never back down. Sylvie's not going to back down from anyone, but Jay would kind of test him, and they developed a great relationship over the course of time. But those moments, I always got a chance to sit back and kind of giggle at that dynamic that would develop on every Tuesday with Jay Cutler. But we've had some funny moments. I wish I had one that kind of stood out more than others, but like every day's a holiday at work, John.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining me. Really a pleasure to have you on and talk about all this, and best wishes to you and the program at ESPN 1000. You guys do a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me, and keep up the great work.
Great talk there with Tom Waddle, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Tom Waddle himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTobin, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Until then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Where are the turtles?